my father went to the council, and they gave us a basement, a hotel basement basically, in Eastbourne. It was really disgusting. Well, I remember the rats, the mouses all around it. It was really, really disgusting. Yeah, that was a turning point for us.
Hassan Aliya, talking about the shock of arrival as a refugee from Syria and his dream of becoming a surgeon. This is Writer's Mosaic, What We Leave, We Carry, the series that tells the true life stories of migration to the UK.
My name is Hassan Aliya. I came from Syria, Damascus. I mean, my childhood was all based in Damascus. I never left Damascus before 2013. It's very beautiful. It has a mixture of everything. In 2 hours you can arrive to the sea. In half an hour you can be on a mountain with a very nice view. And if you go to the town center, it's a historic town center. We've got the biggest mosque. We have a castle in the town center of Damascus. You can find everything. There are a lot of opportunities as well. People, I'm not going to say they love each other, and I'm not going to say it like they do it very greatly, no. But people look after each other. I remember in our neighborhood, if anybody in need of anything, as example in our building, if anybody in need of anything, all neighbors will do something for them. Money, they can get them some money, business, job, anything. And I think people look after each other because they know how bad the government is. So you cannot rely on the government. So people had to rely on themselves. I lived in the UK around 9 years. We came on 2015, October. And yeah, this is where it starts. We left Damascus on 2013. We moved to Lebanon as it was safer for us, because at that time my father decided his journey to be an immigrant somewhere in Europe. It took him around 9 to 12 months to arrive to the UK. It was very rough. Many people lied on him. Many people used him for money, for working, for really, really horrible stories he can tell. However, on the beginning of 2015, he arrived to the UK and he applied for a family reunion. And basically we got it very, very, very quickly. And this is what we was not expecting at all. Because while we were living in Lebanon, we had a very nice community around us. At that time, not now. And having all these friends and people, it's kind of like we grow up in Lebanon more than Syria. But in reality, Syria has more effect on us, especially myself. We arrived at Heathrow Airport. And firstly, I remember we had so many bags. At least me and my brothers were 5 and my mum, number 6. We had at least 2 bags each. My mum, she had a back pain, so she couldn't hold anything. So it was only me and my brother. It was very tough, very tough. Basically, the officers in the airport, they saw all of these bags. And for 2 young people, they said, put it on the side. And we had to open 12 bags for them. It took us around 1 hour. And then another officer came and he started investigating why you're bringing all these bags and stuff. And I remember he was asking, like, who's waiting for you? And I don't speak English. I say, father, father, just like this. And he say, who's coming? I say, brother, 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 and father and mother. When we came out of the airport, we had both of my aunts and my uncle. They've been here for a long time. And they took us to their house. We spent a night there. And then they decided, like, we can't let you stay here forever. So, as the system goes, my father went to the council. And they gave us a basement. A hotel basement, basically. In Eastbourne. It was really disgusting. I remember the rats, the mouses all around it. It was really, really disgusting. Yeah, that was a turning point for us. Especially me, my mother and my brothers. It was like we were literally crying all night. Let us back. We don't want to stay here. My father, he knew like it's going to get better. But for us, it was like a tragedy, literally. And where we are, what we're gonna do, is this the life we came for? I was around 16, like the end of 15, 16 years old. In Lebanon, in the meantime, when my father traveled and we stayed alone, basically we had very nice opportunities. I was studying very nice and I was teaching as well. So I got a master in Arabic. It was a very nice time. But it's good like we didn't stay there, because right now, as example today, the much racism in Lebanon towards Syrian people, it's horribly. So people in like Lebanese people, they're going to the street, we say, warning to the Syrian people, if you do not leave in 48 hours, a tragedy is gonna happen. And a lot of people leaving. And whoever not leaving, dying straight away. They're killing them. So, however it comes, it was the right choice to come here. And England was like, it was rough, very beginning. But years after years, it's becoming warmer and warmer. And it's becoming like home. If I go to Syria today, I know nothing about Syria. But if I stay here, it feels like my country. I know how to go, I know how to do everything, I know how to speak to people, how to treat them, how to get treated, respect them, respect me. But things in Syria are totally different. Until today, I hate Eastbourne. I never go there. Even if anybody invites me, I don't like it. It was like literally a black grave for us. The first thing my mom went into, it was a great depression. And it continued with her for at least 3-4 years. Especially the very first period, it was horribly for her depressed. And what happened is, my father is busy at work. We are starting school and all this stuff, and she left alone. It was very horrible for her. And in terms of going to learn English or whatever, it's very hard for her as well. She can barely walk. And if she has a pain in her back, like she can't even bring that glass to drink water. Nothing she can do. And at the same time, she was comparing her life to her brother and sister's life in here. They've been here for at least 10 years when we came. And my uncle has been here for over 20 years when we came here. You know, his life is just settled. He has his own house, cars, whatever. And she was comparing herself to them. And that was making her even more depressed. And yeah, it took us very, very long, especially for her. The people at the council, when we went, I remember, they were very kind, very respectful. Like, I remember we were expecting to be a very long journey with them. We might have to go and come back another day and whatever. After those 4 weeks, they moved us to a temporary house, what they call an assistant. And it wasn't far away from where we live right now. Yeah, it was in Brighton. And they put us in Brighton because of two things. Because we had school in Brighton. And because my father said, I want to be kind of near to my family. So yeah, we stayed there for 6 months. The house was miserable, unfortunately. But we tried to do a lot of stuff in it. And like, it wasn't easy 6 months, but it was kind of like we could live in there much better than the basement we had firstly. And at that time, we had first going to school, Dorsey Stringer. And this is where the story starts, literally. I remember the first day, we didn't have a uniform yet. And because we went after New Year Eve, so it was like on the 15th of January 2016. And I was 16 years old, yes, but I was really bald, have no hair, and I have a beard as well. So people were looking at me really, really different, like, what is this going here? What's he doing here? And I think before our first day, I think the school did something for all the students. I believe they either did show them all of our pictures or did tell them about us. Because all of the school knew about us, all of them. And the school, with the teachers, with the students, they all were trying to treat us as good as possible. Literally, it was the, like, what can I say? The greatest experience in my life, going to that school. We had three sublight teachers. They were helping us in the classes, homeworks, and even after school, teaching English. Everybody was trying to help. Despite whatever they teach, whatever they do, everybody was trying to help as much as possible. At that stage, we started to learn English. I had a very, very little bit of English, but with their help, I was able to speak English kind of fluently in 8 months. My father was an accountant in Syria. He worked for an accountant office. And he's like something very famous in Syria and everybody requires them. But when he came here, he couldn't do it. Because he holds a degree but in English, not in accounting. So firstly, my uncle, he had a shop when he arrived. And it was a mobile shop in the town center. He worked there for around 4 years, I believe so. And then they decided to stop the shop and sell it. So he went to grocery and he works now until today on a cashier, like doing cashier and stuff. My mum has changed. She changed like from 1 to 0, I would say she changed at least 8 points. Since we came here until today, a lot of things changed. Her pain still as it is, but life is changing, getting better. You know, we now drive cars. She can go anywhere, where, like, anywhere, anytime. She can do whatever she wants. And I've got my daughter as well. She's very happy, and I named my daughter to her mum's name. Because she lost her mum when she was 13 years old. And it was only like always trying to name her, any of her children, to her mum's name. But she never could because we don't have any sisters. I'll tell you a very, very shocking story. That when you are in Lebanon or in Syria, you're not allowed to grow up your beard. Because Otherwise, they will call you extremist. Even the government. We're talking about the government, not the people. However, if you hear, nobody will say anything. And that was my first shocking story. Living in the UK and practicing our religion, it's much easier than back there. Much easier. I teach here in a mosque. My mom, my wife, everybody goes to the mosque. We had the holy month of Ramadan, just passed away 2 weeks ago. We had too many people coming from all around the world. Even non-Muslim people, they come, try, put charity as well. It's very lovely and warm community around here, especially as much as you go to London, Manchester, all the way up. It is even warmer and warmer, and a lot of Muslim. And the reason why there is a lot in the UK, because they feel warm, they feel very free. My dose of life is gonna be kind of mixture. Our life, our faith, norms, values, but she's still gonna take everything from here as well. She's gonna live maybe all her life in here. Maybe she will go to Syria once in her life, maybe she not. Because I'm not allowed to go to Syria, so I don't think she will any time in her life. Basically the compulsory service, the national service, is there waiting for me whenever I go. So I wouldn't take that chance, not even a risk. So it's not safe, and you can be trapped there for quite a long time. It's not gonna be easy for her, on the firstly, because she's gonna be introduced to a lot of things. Come home, oh, that are so such and such things. Oh, mom, I saw such and such things. And we have to keep telling her, oh no, this is not for us, this is not meant for blah blah blah. I'll try to make her understand more than making her just do and don't. Since the day she born, I always think about it. Well, how am I gonna teach her not to do so? It's not gonna be easy, but I have to do it. Because in our faith, in our religion, we say even if I pass away, whatever my daughter does, it's on my book, as we say. So if she does sins, it comes to me as well. If she does a good deed, it comes to me as well. So raising up a kid is not like trying to make it as another example of you. No, but the actions has to be systemized. Like, you can do, you cannot do. Why? There is why for everything. And this is what's lovely about our religion. There is a why for everything. I remember on August 2016, we didn't know about like Brighton as the gay capital of the world and whatever, these kind of things. We were walking, I think, around the town. And people naked on the cycling, naked people. It was like, what's going on? I was turning my head, what's going on? What's going on at that? Yeah, it was really, really the shockest thing I've ever seen in my life. And a few weeks after that, I think less than a few weeks, they started the gay pride. And that was really, really shocking. Really. I've never seen something shocking more than that. Homosexuality is even worse nightmare than just having a normal boyfriend. Yeah, it was for us. Like, my parents, they were always scared of it. The lovely about Brighton, because it's a gay capital of the people or whatever, the people who lives in Brighton, they are all open-minded. So they does accept everybody. Gay people, lesbians, whatever, they still accept people from another country. They respect another religion. I mean, since we came here, me personally, I didn't have any racism situation, anybody was racist to me. And this is what makes me love Brighton more than any other city in the UK. Because I hear a lot of stories in here and there. But I always say, in Brighton, we don't have such a thing. And this is why I think, this is why, because it's the capital of the gay people, all of us are forced to respect everybody, like, despite whatever they are, or whoever they come from, age, sex, everything. It's just like, on the side. You're a human being first, and then we decide about the other things. My health visitor told me the other day, you should be speaking Arabic, just Arabic at home, and let her speak English outside. And this is what exactly my parents did to us. So now we speak fully Arabic, even my very young siblings. And we speak full English as well. So English, you'll have to learn it because she has to go to school, be with people, friends, wherever. But Arabic, it has to be something essential in the house. Because Arabic is not easy to learn. So if you miss it, you miss it. And if she's gonna try to learn afterwards, it's not gonna be easy at all. And she might regret that we didn't teach her that much Arabic. And by the end of the day, she has two languages, which is advanced for her life. I believe I will stay for the rest of my life, but I always think about raising up my children, starting with my daughter right now, and I don't know in the future if I have any, because growing up a child outside here is much easier than being inside. But at the same time, she might lose English. She might lose the nice values of the English society, the respecting, the open-minding as well. But still, there is much more important thing in my side, as I say, for her to avoid more than to learn. And this is what always makes me worry. Am I going to go outside or no? So to be honest, I don't plan for it. But if it comes, it comes. That's what I think about it all the time. Building a life in the UK isn't easy. It's not easy at all. So I might never, ever be able to buy a house. The health system is now down. These kind of things make me balance it. Like, if I go outside, will I be able to survive? Because yes, I know if I'm in England, I can survive. Me like the other people, and we live in all together. But the very big decision is, can I survive outside or no? Even if I go, as example of Syria is now fine, and I go to Syria, I won't be able to make a life in Syria, because Syria is a tough country and the government are very tough. And if I go to any Arabic world, as example, Dubai nowadays is very famous and everybody goes there. There is a hidden things that nobody knows unless you're from those people. Being a Muslim in Dubai is very hard. It's very, very hard. People can say, oh, this is a Muslim country, like Saudi Arabia. Even in Saudi Arabia, it's very hard. It's not easy. It's absolutely not easy. Because the people there, they are either extremist, like very, very, very extreme religious. Like, you can't smoke outside. Women has to wear whatever they cover, not just the head, the face as well. And they are very racist as well. They see themselves like, ah, we are on top of everybody else. No, you're not. I always think about a golden rule. Whatever you take, you must give back. So I always feel like, and this is what I try always to give back. And I think I haven't gave back enough yet. sometimes I feel I'm very angry about what happened, and it shouldn't happen, and I shouldn't be here. Like, as example, if nothing happened at that time, I would have been something absolutely different. Like my cousins, they're still in there. They are not doctors. But look at me, I'm still trying to learning, going to university, learning whatever I can do. But life's still different, very different. I could have had my own business, I could have had my house. And what makes me like angry the most, like when you go outside your country, you suffer for no reason. Even if you have money, even if you have a house, even if you have anything, but the smallest situation you can be into, it makes you suffer. Yeah, my first job was in McDonald's when I was beginning of, like the end of 16. I remember September 16, I went there. And then from that, I moved to doing a food delivery. I bought a scooter and yeah, I was doing food delivery. And then after that, we had a chip shop. So I worked there as well. And then after that, I've changed. I changed like at least 10, 15 times. I'm always trying to pick my chance, but it never works out. I'm working, and I've worked a lot, honestly. In the last 3 years, 3 or 4 years, I had two jobs every day. Daily two jobs, because I was trying to bring my wife here. And the visa was requiring a lot of things, and a lot of money as well. It cost me nearly 30,000 in 3 years, between lawyers, home office fees, insurance, because they take health insurance, and I got refused 3 times as well. So it was a tragedy for me. So I was always having two jobs, which kind of puts me away from continuing my education. Now I'm back. Yeah, but still not easy, because now I have to balance between family, daughter, money, expenses, and studying at the same time. Now I'm doing medicine. And yeah, it is my dream. I study medicine at university. I'm on my foundation year this year. And I think next year, if I couldn't find any Brighton College or Brighton University or Sussex University, I'll have to move out then, which is not going to be happy for me. I think I would love to do surgeon. I would love to continue and do surgeon, but it's kind of a long way to go through. So from now, if I finish this year and I'm good at it, hopefully, I think I will need like another 15 years to be like a real surgeon. You know, leaving your country and going to another country is like taking off your soul and taking another soul. And I'm not saying that because I'm just came to a country that they don't speak Arabic or they don't practice my religion or whatever. No, I think even being in England is much easier for me than being in any Arabic world. But on the same time, going away and going abroad can teach us a lot of things. I think I'm one of the people who lives in England now, and I think I'm one of those hardworking people trying to be in this society. To be honest, if I will ever think I'm British or no, I always think about my life in Britain and in England. It's always like if you have a full-time job, but you have a chance to do something on top of it, like a part-time job. It doesn't really matter if you achieve it or no, but because you still have your full-time job. And this is what my life in England, I've tried my very, very hard to try to be, like, feel inside myself, look, I'm British now, blah, 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 blah. But it didn't work. It didn't work. This is what made me even more proud of who I am. And even if I have the British passport right now, if people ask me, where are you from? I'm from Syria. I'm not British and I will never be British. You are a people, nice people. We are nice people. We live together. But you are who you are and I am who I am. It doesn't matter where you're from. The matter is, you're a person right now. And then we decide about everything later on.